guys, and welcome to paramedicine.com. Mark Kolbeck here. What I want to do today for you guys is to try to pull together some of the teaching material that we've been creating already. So here's what I mean by that. We've talked about the primary survey, and we've talked about the secondary survey, and now we've talked about the respiratory assessment. So since we've gone through sort of those three levels, primary, secondary, and then a specific system assessment, what I want to do is pull them all together with a simple scenario. I'm not even going to talk about treatment. I'm just going to talk about how we would assess somebody. So we'll give you a very simple scenario, and I'm just going to talk through it and leave some notes up here through the magic of technology and show you how we use those three tools, primary survey, secondary survey, and the respiratory assessment, to assess a patient. So let's just give a simple scenario. You're called for a 25-year-old female short of breath. So you're responding to the call, you're in your ambulance with your partner, you're thinking about causes of shortness of breath, thinking about the respiratory assessment that you've learned, and you start to put your gloves and your goggles on, and now you're going to say, okay, I'm thinking about, I'll put on my glasses, I'll put on my gloves, make sure I got my stethoscope and my equipment, seeing our personal body substance isolation safety is done. And then you arrive at the scene. Let's say you arrive at a private residence. So you arrive at a home. You're about 20 minutes away from the local hospital. You're in a safe suburb, middle of the day, no problems with the weather. You start walking into the house, taking your stretcher, your equipment with you, and I've done safety. Now I'm going to do safety first. The F stands for fear. So as I walk in, is there anything that I'm concerned about? Do I have any safety concerns? You say no. All looks okay. It's a nice, well-kept house. Good. Okay. I walk into the house. I see a 25-year-old female sitting in her kitchen, and I start thinking about the incident. In particular, I'm thinking, is there any concern that I have here for trauma? Is she short of breath because she's been hit in the chest with a baseball bat or something like that? And no, not really. Doesn't seem to be any mechanism of injury for sort of a traumatic illness. Okay. So, safety, fear, incident, number. Just confirm, I only see one patient. That's correct, there's only one patient there. Any bystanders? Nope, just the female. Okay. I'm going to start thinking about send for help. I don't actually think I need any help at this point. She looks relatively alert and oriented. Yeah, she seems okay. All right, I don't need any advanced, higher level paramedics. I don't need a medical team or fire department or police or supervisor or animal control or anything like that. So I don't need to think I need to send for help. Do I need to do triage? No, because there's only one patient here. Do I need to do any sort of trauma assessment, worry about injury to her C-spine? Not really. I'm just looking at a 25-year-old sitting in her kitchen. She's looking at me as I walk in. Okay. So that's my safety first. Now I'm going to get. G stands for the general impression. And I see a 26-year-old female sitting in her kitchen on a chair. Is she self-supporting? Yes, she is. Is she tripoding? Yes, she is. Does she look tired or anything? No. When I look at her level of distress, I would judge it as moderate. Okay, so 26-year-old female, self-supporting, no decreased levels of awareness, moderate respiratory distress. Is she tracking me as I come in? Yes, she's following you. She says hi. You say hi back. I say, how are you? She says, oh, I'm short of breath. Okay, so she is alert in terms of my estimating her levels of awareness using alert, verbal, pain, and unresponsive. She's alert, so I'm happy with that. Now I'm going to start thinking about, just before I start really sort of getting into it, are there any threats to me, my team, my patient, or any bystanders? And there doesn't seem to be. She seems to be okay. And there's no catastrophic bleeding that I see, no immediate life threats. There's no people, object, places, environment threats, my POPE survey that I need to worry about. So I'm happy now that I'm safe and I'm not missing anything dramatic or catastrophic, and I can start to focus on my ABCDEs. So let's think about airway. The first thing is positioning. Well, she's short of breath. She seems to be struggling for breath from what I can tell in the scenario. So I would ideally like her to be sitting upright, not lying flat. And she is self-supporting upright, so I'm okay with that. Do I need to start thinking about foreign body airway obstructions, McGill forceps, laryngoscopy? No, she's talking to me, so I'm not going to worry about that. Do I need to worry about an OPA, an NPA, suctioning, laryngeal mask, endotracheal intubation, surgical airways? Nah, she's talking to me, so she's got a patent airway, so I'm happy with that. Okay, so that's my airway. I've got my safety first, get airway. Now I'm going to do breathing. Is she breathing? Yes, because she's talking to me. You can't talk if you're not breathing. So do I need to look, listen, and feel to determine if she's breathing? No, because talking proves the point. So I'm happy with that. Do I need to auscultate her? Well, she's short of breath, so you know what? It probably wouldn't be a bad idea right now to say, "Hi, my name's Mark. I'm a paramedic. How are you doing?" "I'm okay, Mark. I'm just having trouble catching my breath." "Okay, do you mind if I have a quick listen to your lungs and see how your breathing's doing?" "No, that's fine. So I'll take off my stethoscope. I'll have a quick listen, even if I just do quick bilateral subaxillary, you know, bottom of the armpits. Have a quick listen. I'm listening for breathing. Is there any really gross adventitia?" Person running the scenario says, "Yeah, she sounds pretty wheezy." "Okay, pretty wheezy. That's good to know. I'm going to ask my partner to put on oxygen saturation or hemoglobin saturation monitor, as I prefer to think of it. End-tidal CO2, if we can get that as well, if I have that. I'm going to start thinking, do I need to give her oxygen? Do I need to ventilate her? Is she ventilating adequately herself?" Scenario boss tells me, "No, she seems to be breathing pretty well. She's got, you know, good work of breathing, but she's definitely ventilating, getting good air across." "Okay. End-tidal or SpO2 at this point gives me a 96. All right, I don't need to give her any oxygen, so I'm not going to worry about that. The other thing I need to think of here in terms of completeness is, do I need to do a chest needle decompression? Well, I heard bilateral air entry on both sides, so I'm happy with that. I don't need to do a needle decompression for tension pneumothorax." Good. Airway, breathing, circulation. How's her circulation? I'm going to feel for a radial pulse as I talk to her and say, you know, "Can you tell me about what's going on? How are you feeling? What seems to be the problem today?" She's got a good radial pulse. That means her perfusion is good. If she's getting her pulse to her wrist, then she's getting it to her brain and her heart and her lungs and her kidneys, and that's really what I'm worried about right now. So she's got good perfusion. I take a look at her skin. What's the condition of her skin? And I discover it's a little pale, it's warm, and it's not diaphoretic. That's pretty good. Do I need to put an ECG on at this point? Yeah, possibly if she's a little tacky, why not? If my partner's got time, I'll put on an ECG and see what I see. Do I need to start an IV? I'm not really thinking that there's any drugs in particular that I need for the IV route. And there's nothing that says to me, you know, hypovolemic hypotension. So I'm not going to be giving her a fluid bolus. So I'm probably not going to start an IV at this point. But there's a good chance this patient might get one, depending on what the problem is. But not now in my primary survey. So slap on an ECG if I can. Do I need to do CPR? Obviously not, because she's alive and she's talking to me, so I'm not going to worry about that. Airway, breathing, circulation done. Now I start thinking about the decision. What sort of decision do I need to do here? First of all, if it was trauma, I'd be thinking about broken bones or bleeding or a ballooning tension pneumothorax. I don't have any of those. There's no evidence of trauma. So I'm not going to worry about trauma. I'm going to start thinking about my medical, and my medical is bang, zap, push. Does she need benzodiazepines for seizures? No. Does she need adrenaline because she's in anaphylaxis? So far, I haven't seen any evidence of that. Do I need to give her Narcan because of a heroin overdose? No, she's awake. Do I need to give her glucose because she's hypoglycemic? No, she's alert. She's awake and her skin's fairly dry. So that doesn't suggest to me that she's hypoglycemic in any way. Do I need to defibrillate her or cardiovert her or pace her? Nope, she's got a good pulse and she's alert and oriented. Do I need to do an IV push of fluids? Nah, she's got good radial, I'm happy with her perfusion. So that's my decision. Now I'm going to start thinking about extrication. And I think generally, is this a red zone, a yellow zone, or a green zone? Red zone is, you know, it's on fire, there are explosions, it's like a scene from a war movie or something's about to fall on you. I'm safe for that. Is it yellow? Do I need to get out of there quickly? Am I in a hurry? Not right now. So this is a green zone. I'm able to stay here comfortably. I don't have to protect her from environmental factors. We're in her house. It's nice. It's comfortable. The lights are on. This is as good a place as any. Do I need to start, in terms of extrication, thinking about getting any other assistance here to help with me? Do I need like a bariatric team because the patient's obese? No, she's got normal body habitus. Okay. Do I need a medical team or anything like that? I don't think so. Will I be able to transport her myself with my equipment? It seems like I probably will be, so I don't need to think about getting a helicopter here or anything like that. And what destination am I going to go to? Well, at this point, probably any normal hospital looks like it would do. This isn't a patient that appears to be in extremis right now, so probably my local hospital, which I said was, what, 15 minutes away or so. So that's my primary survey. I've done safety first, get ABCDEs, and really, that could be done, I mean, I've been talking about it a little bit, but that could be done in about a minute or so. As soon as I walk in, I'm pretty sure she's got good ABCs. I've put on end-tidal CO2, I've put on an SpO2, I've put on an ECG. She's alert, so I'm not going to worry about blood glucose right now. Yeah, I'm pretty happy. That's my primary survey done. Now I'm going to start thinking about my secondary survey. And so in my secondary survey, it's ICI had vitals assessed and treated. And I'm not going to get into treatment here because this isn't a specific case. It's just how to do an assessment. So first of all, identify my patient. I've identified myself. I ask the patient her name. She says her name's Mary. I get her date of birth. I get a health card number if I have that. Is this your address? Yes, it is. Okay, so now I know who my patient is. I say, Mary, what seems to be the problem? Looks like you're having trouble breathing. Is that really the big problem that's going on? She goes, yeah, I'm just catching my breath. I said, okay, I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that in a second, but let me just make sure there's some other problems that you don't have. Are you feeling any pain or discomfort or heaviness or pressure in your chest? No. Do you feel lightheaded? Have you passed out? Does it feel dizzy? Does it feel like the room is spinning to you? No, she says it doesn't. Okay. Have you been peeing normally? I take a look at her quickly and see if she looks well perfused. She says, yes, I have. Have you been drinking a lot of water? Eating well? Yes. Okay. Have you had a cold, flu, fever, anything like that lately? Have you been coughing up a lot? No. Okay. So what I'm thinking there, the questions I'm asking are, is there a problem with your brain, syncope, presyncope, vertigo? Is there a problem with your heart, ischemic type chest pain or discomfort or pressure? She told me that she's short of breath, so I'm bracketing that for a second, but I am worried about lungs, so I'll come back to the lungs in a second. The perfusion, the drinking, the peeing, I'm thinking about kidneys, and cold, cough, flu, fever, I'm thinking about the immune system. None of those other big five things seem to be a problem, it's just the respiratory. So before I really narrow in on the respiratory, I'm going to do one more broad picture question and ask, do you have any other than the shortness of breath, do you have any other problems in your head, your neck, your chest, your belly, your back, your pelvis, your arms, or your legs? She says, no, I'm just having trouble catching my breath. She says, I can't breathe. Okay, so it's breathing. So now I've done my identify, I've done my chief complaint or condition. The chief complaint, I'm sure, is isolated to shortness of breath. So now I'm going to do my incident history, and I'm going to be asking her about my NOPQRSTU. So, N, can you tell me, I see your shortness of your short of breath now. When were you last normal? When did you last feel okay? I've been short of breath over maybe the past day or so. Last night I was getting a bit tight, and I went to bed, but I woke up this morning, and I'm just feeling like I'm having trouble catching my breath, and it's just been getting worse, and I thought, I think I better call you guys now. So I call 000 or 911 or whatever number is local for you. Okay, so that was last normal. She's also given me a bit of an idea of onset. She was last normal yesterday. Onset seems to start last night. It was a gradual onset, not a sudden onset, which comforts me because in general, as a general rule, realizing there's always exceptions, something that comes on suddenly kills you quickly. Something that comes on slowly kills you slowly. So if it came on slowly, I'm not worried about her just, boom, suddenly dying in general. So that's good. So that's my onset. Is there anything that seemed to bring it on? Was it worse when you moved around or at rest? No, it just came on all by itself, and it's just, yeah, it's tough to catch my breath. Okay, great. Is there anything in particular that makes it worse or anything that makes it better? And she says, no, when I walk around, I get more short of breath. Okay. Is there anything that makes it better? Well, normally I take my Ventolin, but I've run out. Okay, interesting. She takes Ventolin, salbutamol. So I'm thinking asthmatic. That's a big clue that she's just given me. I'm going to deviate for just a second on that and then get back to my system. So are you an asthmatic? Yes. Okay. And you normally take Ventolin? Yeah. Anything else? No, just the Ventolin. Okay. And you just take that for breakthrough shortness of breath? Yeah. And have you taken it now? No, I ran out like 3-4 days ago. I was short of breath then. I used my last. I haven't gotten any more. Okay, I'm starting to get an idea of what's going on here. All right, let me get back to my system. I've identified, I've done my chief complaint, I've ruled out the other five, it's just shortness of breath. I'm on my incident history, I've done my NOP quality. So is this what it normally feels like for your asthma? Yes, it is. Okay. Radiation doesn't really work when you're talking about shortness of breath, so I'm not going to worry about that. Severity. She's an experienced asthmatic from the sound of it, so I'll ask her, how would you rate this particular incident? Is this mild, moderate, or severe? And she says to me, yeah, it's pretty bad. I'd say between moderate and severe. I'm starting to bump up on severe, and that's why I called you guys today. Okay. Now I know where I'm at. Is this typical for you? Is this a normal asthma attack? Or is there anything about this that stands out as abnormal? No, this is, yeah, normal. Okay. And is there any trauma? Have you been hurt at all? Have you hit your chest? Have you been coughing a lot lately? No, nothing like that. Just tight chest. Okay. And my U is for undigested food, and I'm just asking in the back of my mind, again, not such a critical question, but it's just good as a general sort of thing. When was the last time you ate? Do you have any undigested food in your stomach? Oh, probably 4 or 5 hours ago. I just had some breakfast. Otherwise, nothing. Okay, so that gives me my incident history. Now I'm going to go ICI history, a more complete history, the H. You said that you had asthma. Do you have any other medical conditions at all that I should know about? Nope. Any emphysema, bronchitis? Have you had a chest infection recently? Nope, nothing like that. Now, because she's an asthmatic, I'm gonna start asking some specific asthmatic history, my red flag for asthma. When was the last time you were in the hospital? How often do you go to the hospital? Have you ever been intubated? Have you ever been admitted from the eMERGE up into the ICU? Have you ever been on a ventilator because of your asthma? And if she says yes to, she's been admitted or intubated or on a ventilator, we can ask, have you ever stopped breathing completely because of your asthma? Have they ever had to give you adrenaline for your asthma? And she fortunately says no. She's been to the eMERGE a few times when she's short of breath, but they've always been able to turn her around in the eMERGE, so okay, good. This isn't like a really brittle asthmatic. I'm not terribly worried. So I'm still on medical history. I've asked specifically about her asthma. I've asked more broadly, do you have anything other than asthma? She said no, so I've asked about some red flags for asthma. Who's your normal doctor? I'm gonna write the name of their doctor down. With an isolated asthmatic, I'm probably not going to be too worried about family history. I worry more about that in chronic familial conditions like acute coronary syndrome or stuff like that. But I'm going to ask, anybody else in your family have any really bad medical problems like heart attacks, strokes, diabetes, cancer, infections, anything like that? Nope, nothing like that. Family's pretty good. I could ask her at this point about her social history. I don't think that's going to make a lot of difference, so I'm going to bracket that, and I'm maybe going to ask about that later in the ambulance when I've got a bit of time during transport so I can talk to her then. So ICIH is history, which I've done now. I'm going to ask just my general question for history, allergies, and drugs. Is there anything else that you think I need to know? She says no. You're asthmatic, you ran out of your puffer, you were fine yesterday, by last night you were starting to get tight. It's been worse today. Nothing really makes it better. Walking around makes it a bit worse, exerting yourself. Is this a situation you'd normally take your Ventolin for? Yes. Okay. I'm almost there. Like, I'm 99% there. I just want to rule out the weird things that might be weird. Okay. Do you have any allergies at all? Are you allergic to any specific medications? Are you allergic to any chemicals, any environmental conditions, allergic to food or anything else? She says, no, I'm not. Okay. I just want to find out about the medications you take. You said you take Ventolin. Do you take anything else? No, just the Ventolin. Okay. So you don't take any herbal remedies. You haven't taken any over-the-counter medications. You don't have your prescription medication. Have you taken illicit drugs at all? I'm not a police officer. I'm not asking for legal reasons. I'm asking specifically about medical. Marijuana, methamphetamine, MDMA, heroin, anything like that? Nope, nothing. Okay, good. Thanks. Sorry for asking. I just want to make sure I got a full picture of what's going on. She says, that's okay. While I'm asking these questions, my partner, hopefully, has been involved getting vital signs. And he's heard, or she has heard me asking these questions, you know, in one corner of their mind. You develop the skill as you get better. In one corner of their mind, they're going, as I ask these questions. They've been getting the vital signs. So now I turn to my partner and I say, okay, let's have a chat. Do you think there's anything else I need to ask about? They say, no, I think you got it all. I say, okay, give me the vitals. And at this point, I'm writing them down. So they're going to tell me my dirty dozen vitals. GCS is obviously 15. Pain score, they've denied any pain, so I'm not worried about that. Skin, they tell me the findings of the skin. They've looked at the pupils. Pupils are pearl, midline, 5, reactive, moving well, accommodating properly, no problems with the pupils. Entitled CO2, let's say, 48. Temperature's normal, respiratory rate, they're a little tachypneic, she's, you know, breathing away at around 18 to 20. Well, let's say 16 to 18, not too high. Once you start getting over 20, I go, ugh. So 16 to 18. ECG shows a sinus, you know, borderline tach, she's up in the 90s sort of thing, so normal sinus rhythm, but a little fast. Her blood pressure's good, she's 120 over 80. Heart rate, as we said, you know, 90s. He took a sugar just to make sure. Sugar's fine. And SpO2 on room air was like 94, 95, so we're not giving any oxygen. So those are my vital signs, my 12 vital signs. GCS pain, skin, pupils, entitled CO2, temperature, respiratory rate, ECG, BP, pulse, entitled CO2, hemoglobin sats, and blood sugar. Done. Good. All right. So I see I had vitals done, assessed. Now, what assessment am I going to want to do on this person? Because I've put myself into respiratory, I think I'm going to start thinking about the respiratory assessment. So respiratory assessment to me, if you remember from this, we've done our primary, we've done our secondary, now we're going, expanding the secondary into our system-specific assessment. So I'm thinking, what do I want to know about the assessment? I'm going to start thinking about the journey of an oxygen molecule from the outside down to the cell, and I'm going to start asking those questions. So I'm going to say, let me just ask a few questions to get a bit more of a full history. Have you been flying or diving or anything like that recently? And she'll say, no. You haven't been at altitude? No. Have you been in any sort of strange environments, like an industrial environment or somewhere where there might not have been enough oxygen? No. Have you been exposed to a lot of heat lately? And I take a look at her. I'm thinking like heat stroke. That can make people short of breath. If she's sitting in her living room and it's a normal sort of environment and she's not really hot, I might not even ask. But if I'm wondering, I will. Her temperature's normal, so I'm not too worried about that. Then I'm going to start thinking about head injury. Now, I've, because of her respiratory center, I don't see any signs right now of lateralizing. She's not, you know, across my breath, like a stroking sort of patient. I'm also going to start thinking about head injury, and I'm looking for like Cushing's reflex when I look at her vital signs, and I don't see it there, so I'm not worried about that. She's denied taking any psychostimulants, so I'm not worried about that. I'm starting to think about anxiety. Maybe this is, you know, like neurological, sort of just anxious, psychosomatic. She doesn't actually seem all that anxious. This is her normal asthma, so I'm not really worried about that it's anxiety. So then I've gone, you know, outer environment, I've gone to her head, now I start thinking about the airway. Is she breathing normally? Is there any stridor, any obstruction, any infection? Do I see signs of anaphylaxis? I'm thinking about a tension pneumo. Part of my physical exam at this point, I'll have a good listen to her lungs, my partner will do that. Airway seems to be okay from what I can tell. Then I'm going to start thinking about, okay, the oxygen's got down to the alveoli. Can it get across from the alveoli into the blood? So I'm going to start thinking about the respiratory membrane. Is does she have pulmonary fibrosis? Does she have pulmonary edema? Did I hear fluid? Is she wet? Does she have a history of COPD? None of those things are on my radar at this point. If I'm wondering, I might ask her, but I'm not really worried about that. So the oxygen molecule is now gone across the respiratory membrane successfully. It's into the blood. Is there hemoglobin in the blood for the oxygen molecule to get onto? So I'll ask her, first of all, I'm thinking to myself, BP's okay. Yeah, she's got good perfusion. Do you have any problems with your blood at all? Have you ever been told that you have anemia or sickle cell anemia or anything like that? And she says, no problems with my blood. Have you been exposed to any sort of open flames or combustion or car engines or anything that produces exhaust? I'm thinking carbon monoxide. She says, no. Okay, one more thing I want to think about then with the blood is pulmonary embolism, because first of all, female starts thinking me. And if you've heard the episode 4B, the pulmonary embolism workup, then you know I'm going to start thinking girl on an airplane. So I've asked her if she's been flying or diving. She hasn't been doing any of that. She's female. I'm going to ask, I've asked about medications that you're taking already. I just want to make sure, are you taking any hormone replacement therapy or are you taking the birth control pill? She says, no. Okay. She's not grossly obese. She's not really tall. She's not elderly, so I'm not worried about those. Are you a smoker at all? Are you crazy? I'm an asthmatic. Okay, good. You've never had cancer? No, haven't had that. She's not an AFib, so I'm not worried about that. I want to ask a delicate question. It's important for me to know, again, not from a legal, but from a medical point of view. Do you now or have you ever been an IV drug abuser? Have you ever injected medication into your veins yourself? And she says, no, I've never done that. Okay, because I'm thinking about, you know, endothelial irritation, Virchow's triad for pulmonary embolism, no problem. So I've gone across. Have you been sick lately? Have you had any broken bones or immobilized in bed, long bone fractures? No, nothing like that. Have you been pregnant recently or have you recently delivered a baby? No, nothing like that. So amniotic PE, I'm not worried about. And my partner, as he's examining her, is going to have examined motor neurovascular distal. So he'll have looked to see if she has any ischemic limbs. I ask, you know, how are her limbs, motor neurovascular? No, that's all good. Okay. So blood's good. I'm going to start thinking about her heart. Now, she's a 25-year-old female, so probably she's got a healthy heart. But I will ask, just to make sure, you don't have any heart problems, cardiac problems. You've never been told you have congestive heart failure or problems with the valves in your heart. Nope, nothing like that. They've never told you about perhaps a hole in your heart. They might have used words like septal defects or patent foramen ovale or a patent ductus arteriosus. You don't have anything like that? Just no, never heard of any of those. Okay, good. I'm also going to rule out in my mind just quickly, is there anything compressing her heart? So might she have like a pericardial tamponade? And she hasn't complained of any infection or anything like that. If she did, I might do the lean and lie test and see if that makes her discomfort worse. Look for JVD to see if there's any extension. We'll get to that again in a second. I'm going to be thinking about tension pneumothorax, going to be thinking about really profound asthma and, you know, alveolar hyperventilation, so an overinflated chest. And she doesn't seem to be any of that, and there doesn't seem to be any heart problems. Okay, so I've got environment, I've done head, I've done airway, I've done respiratory membrane, I've done blood, I've done heart. That's all pretty good. I'm going to take a look at her body and see if there might be any obstructive processes from the body. So, like, have you been running around a lot lately? Have you, you know, sort of worn yourself out, short of breath from that? Just, no, I'm just sitting at the table, can't catch my breath. Okay, so it's not exertion. It's obviously not obesity, normal body habitus. She's not lying flat, so, you know, she's not orthopneic. She's sitting up, so she's comfortable with that. Like, I don't have to sit her up. I don't have to worry about that. So I'm going to start thinking then about neuromuscular problems, and I'll say, let me just ask you about a few more medical conditions. Tell me if they have this. Now, at this point, she might say, nothing else. I say, okay, just comfort me. I want to be thorough and make sure that before I start treating you with drugs, that I've ruled everything out. Has a doctor ever told you that you have any neuromotor diseases? They might have used words like myasthenia gravis or Guillain-Barré or ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. Have you ever been told any of that? No, nothing. Okay, No problem. Now I'm going to be thinking, because I've thought about the neuromuscular junction, the ability to ventilate, I'm going to go down right to the cells. So how are her cells and what's going to affect her cells? Well, carbon monoxide, which I've already asked about, arsenic. Have you been anywhere where they might have had like bad groundwater that you've been drinking? Nothing like that. Haven't been exposed to any chemicals or pesticides? Nope, nothing like that. Okay, so probably not cellular poisoning. She's still able to do the, you know, Krebs cycle, electron transport chain. Great. That's my questioning. That's my outside to inside. Now I'm going to turn to my partner, who hopefully has been doing some assessments during this time and has been listening out of one ear. And I'll say, what have you got for a physical exam? And they'll say, well, this is now where I turn to my A to V, and I'm going to give the report A to V. So my partner says, well, they've got accessory muscle use. They have gross adventitia, inspiratory, expiratory, bilateral, apices to basis, wheezing going on. So, global wheezing, inspiratory, expiratory. Okay, great. And that gives me my height, my symmetry, my phase, so that's a pretty good report. No crackle, no rubs, no ronchi, nothing like that. Nope, just straight wheeze. Okay. That's A, B, C. I know about the condition of her skin because I've already examined that. Word dyspnea, just in my pretending, I said, you know, she's 5 to 7 word dyspnea, which is concerning. Anything under 10 makes me go, oh, that's a little bit short of breath. She's in the extending position. She's tripodding. I got my O2 sats on room air. We're like 94, 95. The G is gas, end tidal CO2. H is heart rate. She's a little tacky, and I'm worried about that. You shouldn't be, you know, pumping away in your 90s for a heart rate when you're just sitting down. So it's not great. She's obviously in some distress. Fingers, gas, GH. I is inspiratory-expiratory ratio. And my partner tells me she's about a 1 to 3. J is jugular venous distension, and she does actually have a little bit of jugular venous distension. She's about halfway up to between the collarbone and the jawbone. So that's slightly extended JVD. She's starting to get hyperinflation of her lungs that's compressing her heart, and she's starting to drop her preload a little bit because she's not really getting enough blood in. So that's concerning. Respiratory pattern is normal, so no Kussmauls or apneustic, agonal, biots or chain stokes, not worried about that. It's a JKL, is her levels of awareness. She's alert and she's oriented, she's not sleepy. If she was sleepy, I'd start thinking about hypercarbia, but we said her end tidal CO2 is something like 48 or just a little bit above the high end of normal, which is 45, so I'm not too worried about that. KL, levels of awareness, M, midline trachea, so we're going to palpate, oops, sorry, the microphone here, palpate at the suprasternal notch, trachea's midline, then when I start at N, I start thinking about my COPD stuff, so does she have any nocturnal dyspnea or orthopnea? Well, I bet she's orthopnic right now. If we lay her flat, she wouldn't be able to breathe, so we're keeping her up. And that's, you know, the lean and lie test, or just the lie test when we're talking about asthmatics, that if they can't lie down and breathe, you can't leave them at home. Never leave a lying asthmatic. Where are we? So nocturnal dyspnea, orthopnea, doesn't have anything like that. I ask her if she gets short of breath when she goes to sleep, nothing. Does she have peripheral edema? Does she have clubbing of her fingers? She does not. Is she peeping when she talks to me like this? No, she's not. Does she have the queer presentation of a pink puffer or a blue bloater? No, she doesn't. Okay, so the obvious respiratory rate and depth, what's her rate? We said 16 to 18, somewhere in there. What's the depth? She's got good full tidal volume, so that gives me an idea of where she's at. I'm gonna do some spirometry. I'll ask her, do you have a peak expiratory flow meter? And she says, yeah, I do. So can we get that and take a look? What's normal for you? And so she tells me what's normal is. She goes, she gives a blow, and she's well under normal for her peak expiratory flow rate. Okay, we're going to the hospital. We're going to be taking that with you. That's spirometry, ST. So, Tussiv, have you been coughing? A little bit. Yeah, just, you know, kind of. Okay, have you been producing anything with that? Is it a productive cough? Are you coughing stuff up? No, nothing. Okay, so no blood comes up when you cough? Nope. Do you get any, you know, green, like phlegm? I usually use the joke, like green eggs and ham, and usually most people know what I'm saying. Say, no, nothing like that. Okay. I just take a look at her for signs of smoking. Does she have a smoker's face? Does she have the smoker's forelock? Does she smell like smoke? Does the house smell like smoke? Does she have nicotine-stained fingers? No, she says she doesn't smoke, so okay, I'm happy with that. And then I start thinking about the vascular pathology. So one of the things we'll do is just have a quick squeeze of her calves. Does that hurt when she does that? Do your calves hurt when you walk, intermittent claudication? No, nothing like that. We've taken a look at her legs. Both legs are pink, well perfused. There's no superficial dilation of the veins. They're equal when we look at them in terms of discoloration, dysthermia, they're not present. So I'm not really thinking about the vascular pathology. There's no track marks and she denies IV drug user. So I'm not really thinking about the vascular pathology of pulmonary embolism. So really at this point now, I've got a good idea who this patient is. And that probably, all in all, wouldn't have taken me more than about 5 or 10 minutes to get all that done. Probably about 10 minutes we'd be at this point. And I've got a complete picture. I've done my primary survey, I've done my secondary survey, and I've managed to get a really clear idea of her, not only her asthma history, but her general medical history, allergies and drugs, and we've got a really detailed, thorough physical exam. At this point, now, I feel comfortable getting ready to treat. So I would say to her, so the image I'm getting, the story I'm getting is this. You're 25 years old, you got a history of asthma, nothing else. Yesterday you were fine, the shortness of breath started coming on, it feels like your typical asthma. Normally you take Ventolin for this, but you've run out of Ventolin. You went to bed last night, kind of short of breath, it's gotten worse today. You don't have any other medical history, allergies or drugs. You haven't been exposed to anything weird. There's nothing funky. This is just sounding to me like your bad asthma attack. Is that what you're telling me? Is that what you're on board with? Yeah, okay. So at this point, I'd go on to treatment. So most of you know, just for the sake of completion, I'm probably going to start thinking about, first of all, I'm not going to start treating with adrenaline immediately because she's just not that sick. So I'm going to start with some salbutamol, which will probably do it. We're in her house. I'd be fine at this point either going with a nebulized or MDI. I'd probably just ask her preference. We'll go with that, we'll see how it feels. If I've done one round of Ventolin, salbutamol, and albuterol for the Americans, and she's still not breathing very well, I can't lie her flat and have her breathe comfortably, I'll do a second round of salbutamol and I'll add in some ipratropium bromide and see how she responds to that. I might give her steroids, I might give her magnesium. We'll see how she's doing. If she responds well to those, then I'll just probably stop with the treatment there. Once I've done my treatment, I'm going to do my lie and leave test. I'm going to ask her to lie down for a few minutes and see how well she's breathing just lying flat. And I'll talk with her and I'll check her sats and I'll check her end-tidal CO2, do another full set of vitals while she's lying flat just to make sure that she's okay while she's doing that. She says, yeah, I'm fine now. Yeah, I can take a deep breath. I'm not wheezy. I feel good. Then I'll give her the option. Okay, well, we've done a heroic save here. Do you want to go to the hospital? Do you want to get checked out? Or what would you like to do? And let's just say, to make the scenario simple here, and she says, no, I think I'm good. I think I'm actually fine. I think I'm, you know, I don't need to go to the hospital. And I'll say, okay, so what I want you to do now is go to the drugstore and I want you to go get some Ventolin. And she'll say, yes, okay. Depending on the system you work at and what the rules are, if you've already used an MDI puffer, I just give it to her and say, okay, you've got this for now. That'll bridge you over. If you start getting short of breath, call us back. If you're fine, just go now and get yourself some more Ventolin and whatever drugs that you need for your asthma. And happy to have helped, you know. Call us anytime you need us. We're here 24/7. But definitely, if you start getting short of breath, you can call us back today. It's fine. And she'll say, thank you very much. And that would be the end of my call. And I would then make sure that when I'm doing my paperwork, I include all of my primary survey, my secondary survey, the outside to inside questions that I did, ruling out the pertinent negatives, and a detailed physical exam, plus a full set of vitals and physical exam after treatment. And I would probably get her to sign my form saying that she doesn't want to go to the hospital, and that would be the end of it. So that is how an experienced paramedic would approach the very simple sort of bread and butter, we do this every day type of call, of somebody who's short of breath. I gave a common example, asthma. But the idea here was not to look so much at a respiratory scenario, but just to pull together all the stuff that we've been talking about before. I went through my primary survey sequentially. I went through my secondary survey, and as I was going through it, she said, asthma, Ventolin. I went, oh, let me ask some quick questions about that. Okay, back to normal. And I went through my secondary survey. I did a very detailed system-specific assessment, the respiratory assessment. And my partner listening along went, oh, asthma? Okay, respiratory? Okay, and did the A to V physical assessment, physical exam for a respiratory patient. We got our story, did our treatment, made sure they were okay, charted. Vini vidi vici. We're done the call. That's how we apply the primary, the secondary, and in this case, the respiratory assessment to make sure we get everything done. Hopefully that helps. Thanks a lot for watching. If you have any questions, leave them in the comments and I'm happy to answer them.